Welcome to The Wrap, a weekly podcast covering women's sports news. Mills, what have we got this week?
Taking a look around the grounds, the WBBL finals are here. The Matildas are taking on the USA on home soil, and Hannah Green takes a massive payday.
For our key story, we'll discuss the global fears around the safety and well-being of Chinese tennis player Peng Shuai.
In the Budgie Ice Bath, we'll chat to Australian water polo player, two-time Olympian Hannah Buckling, who is part of the research team for a new study conducted by the AIS that looks at the impact of pregnancy on elite athletes.
This episode, Mills, is on YouTube.
That it is. It's a little bit different. It's going to be a little bit different this week because we're in different cities.
Yeah, we're in different parts of the coastline at the moment.
I know. So,
via Zoom. Well, kind of via Zoom. So we'll see how we go. And merch, summer merch is here tonight.
Tonight, Tuesday night. I'm so excited for this.
It's happening. So we've got the varsity tees and we've also got T-Fat muscle tees. So we'll put the link in the show notes, head to the link in our bio, link in our stories, all that stuff.
All that jazz.
Let's take a look around the grounds.
In cricket, the WBBL regular season has come to an end and now we're at a week of elimination matches culminating in the final on Saturday that's going to be hosted by first-placed Perth Scorchers. It's kind of a bit of a shock, I think, from the season that's been. The Melbourne Renegades stumbled late, losing their last two matches to finish second on the ladder to the Scorchers. By contrast, the Scorchers stormed into the final on the back of a six-game winning streak, having heaped more misery on the Sydney Sixers. Oh, I can't believe the Sydney Sixers.
Neither can I.
Pretty sad for the Sydney Sixers, who finished the season in last place, collecting their first wooden spoon in WBBL history.
Not great.
Not great. Yeah, they've had an interesting few seasons, the Sydney Sixers. They started off strong in the first few seasons of the WBBL, but, yeah, haven't been performing as great as their other teams in the tournament.
Yeah, correct.
So just a look at how the final series will work. So on Wednesday night, third-place Brisbane Heat will play the fourth-place Adelaide Strikers at Adelaide Oval in the Eliminator semi-final. Then the winner of that match will then face off against second-place Melbourne Renegades the following night, also at Adelaide Oval in the Challenger semi. And then finally, the winner of the Challenger semi will earn their ticket to the big dance against Perth on Saturday night. The Scorchers will be looking to win the trophy at home at the Optus Stadium in front of a big Perth crowd. But if you're in Adelaide or Perth, you have to get along to these games because I'm sure they're going to be crackers.
In soccer, Matilda's coach Tony Gustafsson has selected the squad to take on the USA. And he's continued to try and find a balance between present-day success and planning for the future. So in terms of the number of caps, so we've got a pretty even spread. So 10 of the players have 10 caps or less, while 12 players have 50 caps or more. So it's a pretty cool mix of experience. Yeah, and some young guns. So they're going to be looking for some revenge after what we've talked about when they fell to the US in that bronze medal match in Tokyo in 2020. But I think their performance is going to be the key focus of these matches. I think there's a little bit of concern still about the defensive pressure at centre back, lacking a little bit of depth there. They've conceded 33 goals in 14 games since April. And we know that a lot of teams now can almost pinpoint Sam Kerr as being such a threat in front of goal. So I think when teams shut Sam Kerr down, we've seen they've struggled to score convincingly. So it'll be interesting to see how they go against a powerhouse team like the US. We will see with the US, though, they're in a similar space, currently undergoing a bit of a generational transformation of their own. We've seen a number of big name stars, including players like Carly Lloyd, who has recently announced her retirement. They've also got some young players coming over and some fringe players too. But there's two matches coming up. I can't wait to go and watch. Saturday. Is it this Saturday?
It's this Saturday. It's come around like that. I'm excited.
How good. Oh, I can't wait to go and watch. Let's do it.
Continuing on in soccer news, just weeks out from the start of the A-League women season, Sydney FC's Ellie Brush has been left devastated after rupturing her ACL for the second time in 8 months. Brush was on track to return early this season from the ACL tear to her right knee, suffered in March, but will instead join Sydney's coaching and backroom staff while she works towards a comeback for the 2022-2023 season. The season kicks off on Friday, December 3rd, and there is no doubt that she'll be adding plenty to the team in her role of coaching and mentoring at the Sydney FC. In ACL news as well, AFLW young gun Tiana Smith will be missing the coming season because of an ACL injury. The Saints said that 19-year-old midfielder hurt her left knee at Saturday training, and scans confirm Smith is out for an extended spell. So very disappointing for them both, but yeah, wishing them speedy recoveries.
In golf, Aussie Hannah Green last week received a huge payday when she took home $1 million after victory in the LPGA Tour's season-long Aon Risk Reward Challenge. So pretty much the prize is given to the player who records the lowest overall score on designated holes at select events. So her victory was confirmed last weekend, even though she didn't play in the last event of the challenge, because she failed to drop a single shot on any of the qualifying holes throughout the season. She was ecstatic with the win because obviously it's a massive chunk of money. She talked about after this win how she'd really wanted to be able to afford a house back in Australia, which is understandable that you probably need to win $1 million at this point in time to be able to buy a house.
Yeah, definitely.
So she's won $2.3 million since joining the tour in 2018, showing that it's a pretty significant bonus to add on to that. She'll be returning to Perth with 2 weeks of hotel quarantine, and spoke about her ambition to be the inaugural winner of the Kari Webb Cup, which will feature a select field of 24 women's players and to be played alongside the men's Australian PGA in January.
Oh, good. In winter sports, we thought we'd provide a little bit of an update on how our athletes are prepping for the 2022 games. So if you're a frequent listener of The Wrap, you know I'm a massive fan of Tia. I'm going to keep talking about it. She's the most dominant CrossFit athlete in history, having won 5 back-to-back CrossFit Games titles. She represented Australia at the Summer Olympics in weightlifting in Rio 2016, and now has her sights set on the bobsled event in 2022. So this is a completely new sport, obviously, for her. It's been a massive learning curve, she said. She joins Ash Werner in the two-person sled with Tia taking the back of the sled. So she'll be the pusher and the breaker, the brake woman. She obviously has got a huge amount of strength and speed, so that comes quite naturally to her. But I think there's been a lot of sport-specific techniques she has to learn, and including how to deal with the G-forces of going down these tracks. So they're currently over in Europe training for the World Cup season, which doubles as a qualifier for the 2022 Beijing Winter Olympics. So they'll compete in a total of 8 races across Austria, Germany, Latvia, and Switzerland in a bid to earn enough points and qualify one of the 25 spots for the 2022 games. It's pretty exciting. The winter season is just kicking off. There'll be plenty of World Cups across all the different disciplines within winter sports. And I'm looking forward to keeping you up to date with how our Aussies are tracking both in the World Cup season and also in the qualification process for the games.
Can't wait. In tennis, Ash Barty has joined some of the greatest names in tennis history by becoming just the 5th woman player ever to be crowned world number one at the end of 3 consecutive years. As we chatted about on The Wrap earlier this month, she was guaranteed the number one ranking even without competing for the last 2 months after an incredible 2021 saw her win Wimbledon along with 4 other titles. The WTA officially confirmed the Aussie had earned the prized accolade of the year-ending number one ranking on Friday. Her dominance has seen her spend 95 consecutive weeks at the top of her game, and the confirmation of her season-ending ranking means she joins a quartet of all-time greats, Steffi Graf, Martina Navratilova, Serena Williams, and Chris Evert, as the only players to finish year-end number one for 3 straight years. What a bunch of women.
What a list, honestly.
Incredible. Oh, let's take a look at the key story. So we're still on tennis for this one, Mills, and it's a story that has been making headlines across the globe, and it's the frightening news that Peng Shuai, the 35-year-old former top-ranked player in women's doubles who won titles at Wimbledon in 2013 and the French Open in 2014, had disappeared after accusing a former top official of sexually assaulting her. China's foreign ministry maintains it is not aware of the controversy surrounding Shuai, with ministry spokesperson telling reporters last week the matter was not a diplomatic question and I'm not aware of the situation. Peng wrote a long social media post on November 2nd saying that she was forced to have sex 3 years ago with Zhang Gaoli at his home despite repeated refusals. Mr. Zhang is a 75-year-old former vice premier who is a member of the ruling Communist Party's all-powerful Politburo Standing Committee. The post was swiftly deleted from Peng's verified account on Weibo, a leading Chinese social media platform, The screenshots of the accusation were shared on the internet.
WTA chief executive Steve Simon has issued a warning to China in an interview with Time magazine, saying there could be repercussions for tennis in China should the country not respond. Simon stated, "Should we find that what we are asking for cannot happen or will not happen, we are prepared to no longer do business within the region and move forward." The tennis world has really rallied behind Peng, with Serena Williams, Naomi Osaka, and many others taking to social media. Williams posted on Twitter, "I am devastated and shocked to hear about the news of my peer Peng Shuai. I hope she is safe and found as soon as possible. This must be investigated and we must not stay silent. Sending love to her and her family during this incredibly difficult time."
Yeah, so following on from that, there have been a couple of things that have come out. So there were photos and videos of Peng at a tournament in Beijing earlier on Sunday, this weekend just gone. And it didn't really do a lot to dampen global concerns about her well-being. I think people talked about whether it was really quite a staged appearance at this event. Our IOC has then also had a video call. So the president of the IOC, Thomas Bach, was on a Zoom call almost with Peng for 30 minutes. And what he said after the call was, she explained that she is safe and well, living at her home in Beijing, but would like to have her privacy respected at this time. That is why she prefers to spend her time with family and friends right now. Nevertheless, she will continue to be involved in tennis, the sport she loves so much.
So Peng's disappearance and the official silence in response to appeals for information prompted calls for a boycott of the Winter Olympics, which is going to be held in Beijing in February, a prestige event for the Communist Party. Overall, people are calling for there to be a full and transparent investigation into Peng's claims.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. Obviously, priority is for her safety and well-being. And once that's confirmed, and it sounds like this call with the IOC, it sounded like she was safe and apparently she was quite relaxed. But I think the next step is making sure that they do a really thorough investigation into these claims.
Yeah, definitely.
Now it's time for the budgie smuggler ice bath.
The Australian Institute of Sport, the AIS, have launched a landmark study into pregnancy amongst elite athletes. The study will be the first of its kind in the country, interviewing professional female athletes about their experience both during pregnancy and returning to work post-pregnancy. The questions will focus on determining what will help or what prevents athletes from returning to elite competition, as well as questions about family support, childcare, and breastfeeding facilities at training centres around the country. The study aims to allow females to stay in their sporting career for longer and not to view motherhood and elite sport as mutually exclusive. Chloe caught up with water polo player and two-time Olympian Hannah Buckling, who is a part of the research team for the Mum Elite study.
Hannah, thank you so much for coming on and having a chat with us. Can you tell us to start off how you first got into playing water polo?
Oh, that's a long time ago now. I think my first introduction was as a fun thing to do at swimming training. Sometimes we'd play a little bit of flipper ball in primary school. Mm-hmm. And I guess from there, I was really, really bad at it, like really very, but not good. And stubborn old me was like, well, I'm determined to be good. I refuse to be bad at this. And that was it.
That's very cool. So you must have been quite stubborn because you recently went to your second Olympics. So I think that your persistence really paid off there and you obviously excelled quite a lot. What did it mean to you to get to represent your country and compete at your second Olympics?
Wow. I don't know. I think it was very different to the first Olympics, I think. And, you know, I think putting on the green and gold at an Olympic Games, as you know, is just, there's no honor like it and there's no feeling like it being able to sing the national anthem. I think that the Tokyo Olympics had some more layers of, I don't know. I think it was not just pride in representing your country, but I think it was also had this overwhelming feeling of pride that you and your team and the rest of the athletes over there had, and Japan had managed to put it on despite everything that was going against it. And I think that that made it so much more special. And while, you know, results obviously is why you go to an Olympics, I think that even though we didn't get the result that we wanted, I still look back on it and I'm so incredibly proud just to have been there, because the last 18 months leading up to it were everything but smooth, I guess.
It's a good way to describe it. The AIS have recently launched a study that's looking at the impacts of pregnancy on athletes. and you're involved with this study. Can you tell us, I guess, a little bit more about it, but also how you came to be involved with the research side of it?
Yeah, well, I guess I was a part of the Female Performance and Health Initiative, which is another project that's being run through the AIS that essentially has created education modules for coaches, athletes, and staff to educate them about women's health, and particularly women's health in the context of high-performance sport. And through my involvement with that, I was put in touch with the lead researchers for what is called the Mama Leap Project, where we are looking at high-performance athletes and their experience around high-performance sport, both during and after pregnancy. The Mama Leap Project was something I was super keen to be a part of. As soon as I'd heard about it, I was like, please, how can I help? Because it's as women are becoming, you know, as women's sport is becoming more and more professional, women no longer are playing sport or participating in sport just for the fun of it. It's a career, and it's something that they want to be able to do. You know, you look at men's sport and they're able to do it well into their 40s in some sports. But for so long, because it wasn't professional, so many women had to play sport and then retire and then have babies. And now that it's becoming a career and something that people can do for a long period of their time, we need to be able to facilitate women to be able to have families and then be able to go back to sport. But we don't really know, because women haven't been doing it. And it's, you know, only really recently that women have been able to start managing both. So we're trying to look to see what the kind of barriers are, not just physically, but also mentally and financially and socially, to women, you know, being able to go and have a baby and then return to high performance sport.
Yeah, we've had the chance to chat to a couple of athletes who've had babies and returned to sport. We chatted to Jess Duffin recently, who's an AFLW player and cricketer. We've had a couple of my Aussie Sevens teammates have had babies and have done a return to the sport.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest goal that you guys are hoping to get out of collecting this data?
I guess the primary goal is finding out how we can best support women in returning to sport post-pregnancy. I think that's the biggest, and also during pregnancy. I think that's the biggest unknown. And I feel like a lot of players that I've, you know, spoken to, and I'm sure that you got the same thing, was that it was largely a, well, let's just see how this goes and we're going to figure it out as we go along. But if we've got research that we have an evidence base behind the ways that we're running their physio, the ways that we're running their return to sport, the ways that they're running fitness and training during pregnancy in order to minimize the drop between the period of the postpartum period before returning to sport, these are the types of things that we need to be able to do, and we need to be able to have an evidence base to say, actually, yes, this is the best way to do it, rather than essentially playing it by ear and going, let's just see how this goes, which has kind of been how it's done in the past.
So who can be involved in this, and how do people get involved with the study?
Yeah, so the eligibility is any female athlete from a state or territory level to a national to an international level who is competing in the 6 months prior to falling pregnant or currently pregnant, someone who is over the age of 18, as well as you need to have given birth after 1st of July 2016.
Okay, yeah, there's a lot in there.
There is a link. There will be a link to this, I think, and I'll forward you a link so you can see and have it all written down. But yeah, you have to have given birth after July 2016, essentially state, national, international level, or currently pregnant.
Okay, great. I love that. Yeah, so we'll make sure we put that link in the show notes, and we'll include that in our socials too for people to get involved.
Yeah, so if you're unsure, just go and have a look. It does put it slightly more clearly than I have said it out on the website.
No, you nailed it. I love your work. Thank you so much for coming on for a chat about briefly about your career, but about the importance of this study. I think, as I said, we've chatted to some athletes, and I think it's so important to get some more information and some more, I guess, structure in place for future female athletes to ensure that people can continue their careers to include pregnancy and childbirth too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me, Chloe.
Let's take a look at what to watch. In soccer, Saturday night sees the Matildas take on the US at Stadium Australia in Sydney. The Matildas are hoping to break the record for the biggest crowd at a women's soccer match in Australia. So grab your tickets if you're in Sydney and be part of history. If you can't get to the match, you can watch on Channel 10.
In cricket, the WBBL final will also be held on Saturday night with the Perth Scorchers currently waiting to see who will meet them in the decider. Tune in on Channel 7 and Fox Cricket.
In what to listen to, Season 2, Episode 7 of the TFAT podcast came out last week with Paralympian Vanessa Lowe. She's bloody incredible. I listened back to it because I obviously was part of the interview, but when I listened back, she's quite amazing. Like, just her story, but I loved the way that she has this really cool approach to life, like the way she views adversity as a massive opportunity. And I don't know, yeah, go and have a listen. It's quite an emotional. I've got a few text messages from people who actually cried a couple of times listening to it. It's an amazing interview, so get your ears around it.
You can find us on Instagram at The Female Athlete Project. And as we said, we are on YouTube, so you can click the link in the show notes or in the link in our bio on Instagram. Hit subscribe, give us a like, give us a comment, let us know what you think.
And click the link.
Click the link.
And summer merch.
Summer merch. Shop our merch.
It's live tonight, Tuesday night. Get amongst it.
It's dropped 2 out of 3, so I'm very excited. It's going to be a few exciting weeks.
How good. And that's the wrap.
See you next week, Chloe.
Bye.